Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson, and it's time once again for America's Most Haunted Radio, bringing together the finest minds and personalities from across the paranormal spectrum. America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places is now an epic book from Berkeley Penguin. History, legends, investigations, interviews, and profiles of America's 10 Most Haunted Hotspots by Eric Olson and haunted housewife Teresa Argy. Be sure to join us on Twitter and Facebook at AM Haunted, Pinterest at America's Most Haunted, and our website, americas-most-haunted.com. And here every week on America's Most Haunted Radio with all the top names in the paranormal field. Joel Sturgis has been in the radio business for many a moon and has hosted such hit shows as Z-Talk Live and Airstrike Radio. And now, the world-famous After Hours AM. He's interviewed the biggest names from the world of the paranormal and entertainment and everything in between. Joel also has a deep interest in all things paranormal, his own bad self in the real world, and he loves a good horror movie. Welcome to America's Most Haunted, Joel.
Hey, man. Well, thank you for having me, and boy, did you ever make me sound good. Way better than I am in reality.
I tried. It was a mere small section of your contributions to life and earth.
Wow. Now, okay. Now you're making me blush over here, and that doesn't happen very often. But here's the thing, is I know my bio was short, and the reason for that is because I'm a radio host, so usually all the spotlight goes on my guest, and not often is the microphone turned on this end. So I guess I'll expand on that. I have actually been a paranormal investigator for the last 20 years. I mean, too long, ever since, you know, I'm 40 now. So I was about 20 years old when I got bit by the bug. You know, a lot of it was just a couple of experiences I couldn't figure out. Like, much like you, you know, we talked about your experiences. Weird, make you scratch your head kind of experiences. And I start digging deeper and deeper into it. And the thing that hooked me, being a radio personality and being in radio for all these years, is how sound works. And where are these voices really coming from? That's what grabbed me. Because, you know, anyone can sit there and they can say, well, hello, Johnny, and be in a normal voice that we hear every day. But it's the ones that are beyond our own hearing capabilities that actually pique my interest the most.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I find, of all the various objective, quote-unquote, forms of paranormal evidence between video, photographs, obviously personal experiences, but I guess that's not really necessarily considered objective evidence, though I don't know. I guess it should be. But nonetheless, I agree with you. Audio, to me, seems the most promising in terms of actually having meaning. As we all know, unfortunately, and fortunately too, but in this digital age with all of the tools available, it's just so easy, and I imagine for some people tempting, to fudge the material a little bit, Photoshop and whatnot, and with video as well. But with audio, it seems to be either people are perhaps just less inclined to do such a thing because maybe it's not so dramatic, but it just seems to be also just more legitimate. And I think it's harder to get that kind of otherworldly sound or even kind of that metallic-ish sound that we hear so often with EVPs. So for those various reasons and the fact that, my God, where the heck are they coming from? I agree with you. I think they are the most indelible forms, right now anyway, of paranormal evidence.
Exactly, barring a ghost jumping out on live TV, dancing around and saying, here I am, and explaining everything for us. That's the closest we have. And the reason why people don't fake it is, it's really simple, because my equipment doesn't lie to me. There's no way a person with a human voice can mimic above the normal octaves and range of a human listening ear, because that's what we do. When we start getting into the the 45,000 to 67,000 approximate hertz range. Now we're talking. Now we're talking what like a dog would hear it. And that is why a lot of, I think, now this is my own opinion, why a lot of animals react to hear, and why they seem to hear things we don't. I really firmly believe that on the other side, quote unquote, the megahertz range is more in tune with the dog's hearing than it is our own. And that's why we don't hear it real time. But have you ever seen a dog react just weird? Like for no good reason, like running to the door and barking for just no good reason.
Oh, absolutely. That seems to be a very common response, or kind of a first response. You know, it's the canary in the coal mine. The first thing that happens is the dog.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of ran my own test as I have a little chihuahua. I love him dearly. Love him. His name is Moose, oddly enough. 5-pound dog named Moose. Go figure. But he thinks he's huge. But when on a couple investigations where I knew there was activity and I knew things were going on, friendly places, so before anyone yells, I put my dog in jeopardy, these were all really safe, private homes of people I knew. And I wanted to see how he reacted during an EVP session. And I would mark the times that he would kind of look up or look around or act like he was hearing something that I was not at the time. And marking that and timestamping that and then going back to my own audio, I said, son of a gun, he's hearing this. He's hearing this real time. He's reacting to what I can't hear. And so that's what kind of, you know, doing a first-hand real experiment rather than a computer trying to tell me what I should be hearing, I brought an animal with me to really test this. And it was pretty startling, the results I had.
That's fascinating. It really is. You know what we should look into, and maybe you have, I haven't yet, is we should look at what the frequency range is of various animals and those that are at least tameable.
Well, you know,
we
actually
should bring them in.
A cat has a 64,000 hertz range of listening. So they are actually even more higher pitched than a dog. They can hear further into the octaves than even dogs can. And a horse has 33,500 hertz.
Well, you do know these things.
Well, I do. Just because I've studied different ways that different animals hear. Because, quite honestly, our range of hearing as human beings, we don't have the greatest hearing range. In fact, when it comes right down to it, we're not very good at hearing. We're really good at seeing things, and we're really good at picking things out, especially faces that aren't there with our eyes. But as far as hearing goes, we kind of rank really low on the totem pole of actually hearing.
And yet, we're the ones who spend all the money on high-end audio equipment. You don't see dogs doing
no,
that.
No, they don't need it. They're like, oh, leave me alone.
Enough with the audio.
Exactly. You know, there was an experiment with bats, because bats, they actually hear 110,000. Megahertz.
I was actually going to mention bats because I did know that they had a very wide range. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they did what they did is various experiments on them with sound, with voices actually, of various human voices and dogs barking, things like that, at different megahertz to see how they reacted. And it was startling when they saw the range, which we did not know that they could hear at that frequency. Until they did a study on them, they can actually hear into the 110 megahertz section, which is unheard of, because actually the only thing that beats them, you know, is not on land. A porpoise actually hears at 150 hertz, so, you know, 150,000 hertz. So it's just strange how they can react and how they can hear. But anyhow, getting away from all that science crap. The thing that intrigued me was how it's happening. Not that it's happening, but how it's happening and where it's coming from. You know, I firmly believe that when a spirit voice comes through and you're having this interaction and you're hearing the hertz or what have you going on, it's really a marvel of somewhat, I guess, quasi-science that's even happening. Number one, because if they are in another dimension, they are crossing dimensional lines, which would explain. Now, Eric, have you ever heard popping in EVP, like in the beginning and the end?
Yes, definitely.
That to me, my opinion, is popping is them, their voice crossing dimensions.
Fascinating.
Because it'll almost be like a high pitch, like a pop, like an electrical pop. And then you'll get the voice, and then a lot of times you'll get the same pop on the way out. To me, I do believe, in my opinion, of course, and if someone can prove me wrong, I'd love it because I'm always up for a good debate. That is them crossing the Hertz ranges and creating that distortion.
What are your thoughts on why spirits or energy or ghosts, whatever we're calling them, these entities, what are your thoughts on why they function in the range that they do function in?
You know, that's a good question. Nobody quite knows that one yet. I mean, you know, once we're there, we'll kind of be able, to know all this. But I do believe that it's more of a dimensional gap that's causing it. And I'm not quite sure what hertz they operate in, or whether they're actually having to use the atmosphere around us as an electrical charge to create these voices. That would really lend credence to the manipulation of the atmosphere. Not them necessarily talking, but them actually just manipulating the atmosphere around them to make voice.
Right, because of course that's the whole other side of it, is how are they generating this, what amounts to energy, when they don't have a body to do so? They don't have the physical mechanism to generate sound like we do anyway, and other earthbound creatures. We use the physical structure of our heads and our faces and our throats and our lungs and tongues and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in order to create those sounds. What are your thoughts on how they actually generate that energy when they don't
Well,
have bodies?
there's a lot of schools of thought on this. Number one, it shouldn't even be there by all rights. Einstein had this great theory that energy can neither be destroyed nor manipulated nor created, truly. It can only change shape. And I think that when we leave our body, we leave as energy. Okay, we get released back in the atmosphere from which some would say we come. At that point, we are, the theory is, and I'm not sure because all the stuff as we move forward, it's going to get clearer and clearer as technology maybe gets better and maybe we learn a little bit more. But we are able to manipulate the atmosphere as in ions and electrical charge in the atmosphere to create noise. But the thing of it is most electrical atmosphere noise is above our hearing range. So when a spirit goes to manipulate it, they don't have the body. All they have is the energy to manipulate the energy that's already in the room to create the voice.
Got it. So they're kind of marshaling it. They're
They're kind of using it. That's why the cold spots,
corralling it.
kind of like the cold spots. Energy seems to be sucked out of a room. That's why EMF is really utilized, because we're able to monitor the atmosphere and the electrical charge and the manipulation that might be occurring in the atmosphere. When energy is being sucked out of the atmosphere, it gets colder
Right.
because they're taking away. Because when it gets warmer, that means that everything's moving faster. When it gets colder, that means everything's moving slower. So they're actually grabbing and harnessing. In a lot of theories, and this is all theoretical, of course, they're actually grabbing and harnessing this electrical charge.
Fascinating. I'm thinking deeply as we speak, pondering that reality. It's a little bit different from really how I've had it presented before. So I think that makes an awful lot of sense. I think it's really quite logical, very interesting. I've had a couple different people say that they think that it's all conveyed psychically. And then, of course, our question was, well, then how could it be recorded if it's only being conveyed through psychic channels, from mind to mind, as it were. How can there be a physical manifestation of it?
Yeah, that's, you know, I respect Evelyn's theory. First, I want to throw that out there. And if that's the theory that they subscribe to, and it's as good as any theory out there, to be honest with you. I don't necessarily believe that, because why do we have the physical evidence? If it's purely psychic, why is the third party, as in a recorder, able to pick that up? It needs to have some type of audio going on to pick it up, right, Eric?
Exactly.
If it's psychic, if it's minds linking, there is no outward expression of noise.
There'd be no way to record it, exactly. It would not register on any kind of equipment.
No, and there are people that have what they call EVP. You know, instead of EVP, they just have the voice phenomena where they actually hear it once in a while, real time. And that's another interesting thing. I was just presented with a recorded voice phenomena. I can't call it EVP because they heard this real time and everyone reacted to it in the room. It sounded a lot like a shotgun going off, but everybody heard it and no one had an explanation for it.
Wow. So what are your thoughts on kind of that side of the evidence, quote unquote, spectrum, whether it be audio or otherwise, about the recording, you know, that energy has been somehow recorded and it's just in essence playing back over and over again?
There is a possibility of that, but we have to take in consideration now intelligent conversations that are going on. There are many, many times I've heard this where someone asks a direct question and they get direct answer.
Right.
How would they know if it was a recording going over and over and over, saying the same phrases over and over and over, how would they be able to not only have just one sentence communication? I've heard darn near full conversations going on with the EVP and the person, the investigator. Where you just can't fake that. It is what it is. It's alive and it does its thing. And I don't believe it's by chance, sir. And long story short.
Interesting. To me, it seems like there's kind of probably has to be two different phenomena where you do have the residual, as it is often called, the recording, the playback. Somehow that energy has been stored.
Yeah, I believe that that's possible. Now, I'm not saying there is not residual. I believe that there is. But I also believe that there's intelligent.
Yeah, well, it's pretty hard to explain away, like you're saying, all these various responses and conversations. And, I mean, they're all throughout our book. You know, we've had all kinds of EVP that reflect direct responses. What are your thoughts on the, shall we say, mitigated or intermediated voice phenomenons or sound phenomenons, i.e. through the spirit box? What are your thoughts on the legitimacy of the spirit box? And maybe just give everyone a quick rundown on what that is.
Well, the spirit box really, it really began with Frank Sumption. With Frank's box is where the kind of the grandfather of them all, and God rest his soul. And then we had the Radio Shack hat come out, which is just a radio that's modified. All this device really does is there are a set amount of frequencies, and there's hundreds set into any radio. Any digital radio that can scan radio stations will have hundreds preset into their logs. You flip it on and you let it. First off, you have to modify the radio to not stop on audio. You know what I mean? Like if it finds like Billy Joel playing a song, it doesn't stop there. Like your car stereo will. You know, if you hit the seek button.
Exactly.
It'll stop on any strong station. First, you modify the box so it will keep going through the frequencies, no matter how strong the frequency is. And the thought behind that is that if you modify these boxes so it's covering all these different frequencies, all these different megahertz, you are able to do direct, real-time conversation with the dead, more or less, in essence. You're able to say, who was the president when you were alive? And it should spit out in a lot of the demonstrations I've seen an answer. The problem with something like this is, A, you have a ton of interference going on. It's really hard for me to make hide or hair of these conversations, quite honestly. Where an EVP that's clean, especially Class A, there is no guessing of what that Class A EVP said at all. Where you have this radio that's going through all these frequencies, and it sounds like a lot of static. You can matrix that to say whatever you want it to. If you listen hard enough, it's a lot like seeing a wall, a face on the wall. You stare at it long enough, you're going to start seeing faces. Well, our ears are a lot like that. So we easily manipulate static into words. I don't believe that they're very reliable. I do believe that they have their place. If investigators want to use them, I support it, because, you know, if we don't push the field forward, we're never going to get any more answers. But do I believe that they are very reliable? In my opinion, and my opinion only, no, sir.
I agree. It's like you said, it's too often that what could be almost anything is interpreted as words, and especially then when you take that additional stretch of having what sounds like it could be almost anything, and you apply it to a question that's been asked and say, well, you know, that's a clear answer of the question. I agree. I find that to be unreliable. I agree with you too. I mean, there's no tool. Tools are tools. Tools are only as good as the people using them and in their ability to make them function, and equally importantly, to interpret them. So there's nothing wrong with tools, and I agree with you. There certainly could be times when it's possible that an entity could somehow figure out how to manipulate those signals to come up with a sound. But you know, it's an interesting theory on how it works. But to me, from what I've heard anyway, the results are tenuous. Hey, I really want to get back to your origins. We kind of glossed over that. I, of course, on your show, when I was being interviewed by you, when I was a guest for America's Most Haunted, talked about kind of my origin tales and how indelibly imprinted they were on me. And in fact, I ran away from it all for about 30 years or close to it. And so I'm very interested in hearing what your really core experiences were.
You know, I'll even take you as far back as 6 years old. How does that sound?
Oh, my goodness.
When I was a six-year-old boy, I lived in a creepy, and I know like everybody else, a creepy farmhouse. And I will never forget the time. I was a young guy, just a young kid. And I have sisters that are 5 years older than I am. And my parents had gone out for the evening, and they left us all alone. And way upstairs in the attic was my room, of course. I gotta have the creepy part of the house, you know. So I go upstairs because I'm told by my eldest sisters, they're twins, of course, two twin sisters, so they can beat the crap out of me. So I listened a lot back then. It's time to go to bed. Time to put your pajamas on. Do all that kind of fun stuff, and we're going to stay down here and watch TV, all right? Okay. Well, okay, so I go upstairs, minding my own business like I did a thousand times before, and I stop because there's a thing, Eric, sitting on my bed.
Oh, my.
It was the darkest, blackest shadow. Imagine the darkest, darkest you've ever seen in your life.
I know what that is. I've seen that.
And it's sitting, staring at me on my bed. I stopped in my six-year-old mind, and this, I can recall every detail of this story, even today, and I'm 40 years old. I mean, this is how ingrained it is in my mind. I stopped, it looked at me, I looked at it, and we locked eyes. I mean, it seemed like we were sitting there staring at each other for hours. In reality, it's probably, what, 2 or 3 seconds? And the thing just oozed nastiness. You know what I mean? How you just get that feeling something ain't right and it's just nasty.
Malign, yes.
Yes, just evil, you know, just that feeling. And I was scared, literally. I think I'd urine run down my pants, to be
I'd be
honest.
surprised
Right
if you
to the left.
didn't.
And it looked at me, I looked at it, and I blinked my eyes, and it was gone. Now, I don't know what the heck this entity was when I was 6 years old, sitting on my bed, but it always stuck with me. And of course, I told my mom, told my dad, told everyone that listened. Of course, you know, no one listens to a 6 year old. You know, they're like, well, you know, you were just scared. It made you scared. So I tucked that in the back of my head until I saw it again when I was in my 20s.
Oh.
Yeah, it was an odd thing. I was living in a small efficiency apartment, living off ramen noodles. I was just trying to make it like everybody else, you know, young guy going to college, doing his thing. And I had a creepy, yes, I guess I have this long running trend of living in creepy places. I had this creepy efficiency apartment, and I was, you know, I came in late. I worked the late shift. I was kind of stumbling in. You know how guys treat their apartments like a locker more than a house, you know?
Yes.
And so, you know, I was going to, it was probably about 11 o'clock. I was going to throw my clothes in the clothes in the old hamper. If, well, let's just be honest, I never used a hamper. I was gonna get changed to go down to the bar, like every young guy does. But instead, I opened the door to my apartment and I gaze across, and there's just a every so little bit of light coming from the southern window, shining in. It was a big moon too. I mean, it was one of those big, almost like this is September, so we're getting close to those harvest moons. You know what I'm talking about, those great big moons that just kind of shine real high.
Sure, absolutely. There's
Perfect.
songs about them.
Exactly. Perfect light was coming through that window. And when I creep open that door, there's that son of a gun just sitting on my bed again. I looked at it, it looked at me. And this time it was more of a, I'm not going to be afraid this time. I'm older now, Eric.
And
I used
bigger.
to be afraid of this stuff. Well, urine comes down the leg again. And I say, I don't know what the heck you are. In my mind, of course, this was not a like you and me talking. This was more of a conversation, I guess, through the mind.
Right.
It was more, I stopped dead in my tracks, like, oh, what the hell is this thing? And it actually, at this point, stood up, Eric. This occasion stood up. I would say, you ever see Shaquille O'Neal on TV?
Oh, yes.
Taller than him, easily.
Wow.
And it took off, just took off. But the thing of it was, wasn't so much the encounter. It was the encounter again, but the same feeling of fear, the same foreboding feeling, just kind of there, and it nags at you once you're. Once you look at something like this and you have an encounter with a dark entity, it almost nags you in the back of your head. You know, because, you know, what the heck was it? And is it going to come back? That's another thing that always scares you. You know, is it going to come back? After that second encounter with, I don't know with what, everybody, I wish I did. I'm still trying to figure that out. I started looking deeper into the paranormal. Well, first I started, of course, you know, in the bad stuff, the demonology, going, oh my gosh, it must be a demon. It must be something bad that's probably been following me since I was a kid, just didn't know it. The more I dug into it, the more intrigued I was of how it works and why it works and where do we go and are there other dimensions with other creatures? Because I firmly believe this thing was inhuman. I don't believe it was like Casper the Friendly Ghost. I think it was something that wasn't necessarily the nicest little critter in the world. Why I was the one to see it, I don't know. I don't have that answer for anybody, but I did see it. But that's really, Eric, the story and the, I mean, that's really what got me thinking about paranormal.
Well, that would do it. What, are you sure it was the same? Do you think it was the same entity?
I don't know. That's just it. It wasn't like, you know, they don't have name tags on them.
Ha.
No. Hello, my name is Bob. I don't know if it was the same or whether it was the mindset or whether it was Any factors involved? It was one of those moments where I was just going to throw my clothes in my apartment, get dressed in some, out of work clothes, go downtown, and maybe meet a young lady. Who knows?
God knows.
Who knows what would have happened that night? But instead, I had the living, scared right out of me. It was just that whole, what are you moment. I mean, that's the thing that gets me the most, isn't it? It's what is it? I mean, what is this?
I agree entirely. I think if you have any kind of a analytical mind at all, that's where the fascination lies. Of course we know there's other elements, there's religious elements, there's kind of philosophical elements, but I'm absolutely fascinated with, okay, so assuming any of these things that sure seem to be real are real, what are they? What is the physical mechanism that creates it? How do they function? Do they have quote unquote lives? Do they have inner lives? Do they sit around and think about things?
What's their reason for being?
Exactly. And if you think about it, some of these scenarios are just ineffably sad. Like if they're trapped, if they don't know, they can't find their way, they don't know who they are, they don't know what they're supposed to be doing, or they're simply too afraid to move on. They themselves are afraid of what they will find at the next level. Questions like that, I mean, to me, it's like, wow, some of those answers would be so sad. I just started watching, believe it or not, after all these years, I just started watching. We finally broke down and we watched, we've been watching Doctor Who this season. This is
good
it.
Show.
This
good
is
show.
The very first time. And I found it mostly very entertaining, fascinating. Some things are, kind of hokey, but for the most part, I mean, I occasionally caught an episode maybe, once every 10 years, dating back all the way to when, I don't even know when it was first on TV.
Oh, yeah, it's been around a long time. It's
been around forever, and I know there was a break. But the production values of some of those old shows of decades ago were, shall we say, poor. So this is much, much more realistic and better looking, and it's very imaginative. Anyway, one of those episodes, it was toward the end of the season that just ended recently, was the girl, the current girl, who I like a lot. She's very cute, smart, perky.
Well, that's what makes a TV show, too, is eye appeal.
Well,
if it's not there, I don't watch it.
She's cute, smart, perky, all that good stuff. So I'm digging her. So she had a boyfriend, not Doctor Who, because this Doctor Who's old. In fact, this Doctor Who is my age, exactly.
My age? You make it sound like you're 10,000 years old.
No, I'm only 9,000 years old. So, but anyway, they make a big deal about the fact that there's this, large age difference. It's probably about, 30 years, I guess, approximately, between them. Anyway, so she had a boyfriend. The boyfriend heroically died, saving the world, which is a good way to go if you're going to go. He saved the world, that boyfriend. So they communicate with the boyfriend in the afterlife, and what they find out is, and this really made me think, what they find out is nothing stops just because the body is no longer responsive. It's kind of like that ghost boy who's been making all the rounds lately.
Sure.
He could feel everything. He could hear everything. So imagine, the message he ekes out is, please bury me.
That's his message.
I'm
sitting in the rain over here.
Do not burn me. Think about it, because you feel it, right?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. So what a terrible, fascinating, interesting, but awful concept that that all these poor people in, let's say India for hundreds of years or thousands of years, all these poor people are feeling the agony of being burnt. So
Oh.
that you continue to have all your sensory input and what your body does even after you're dead. So that was the premise of that episode. And gosh, I mean, I hope that's not the case.
No, I hope so neither, because what if you die in a fiery car wreck?
Oh my gosh. And then just whatever happens to you, after
Yeah.
that.
But I have a theory. I have a theory that I've kind of thought on for a while. I think it's more like this, Eric, if you'll bear with me for a second. Imagine we all live in an apartment building, big high-rise building. And we have common areas like the Coke machine, the laundry area, things such as this, where everybody goes to it to use it. And let's just say a human being's living on a third floor, Bigfoot's 10th floor, Loch Ness Monster's whatever floor, demons are this floor. Once in a great while, you'll run into each other at the elevator. Just a happening of a running into each other in the common area.
I like that. That's a very good analogy.
It doesn't necessarily mean that they dwell in our area. We have our own floor. But they're going down. They're going to go down to, let's just say, the fifth level.
They're going to the candy machine.
Exactly. When we happen to bump into them. And it's nothing as in, like, they meant to bump into us or we meant to bump into them. It's just a happenstance. I think that's as plausible as any other theory.
I think that's a great theory. It makes a lot of sense. Do you also think, though, that there are actual kind of committed hauntings? I mean, do you think that entities do reside in a given place
I
or.
think so. I think what happens is a lot of reason why maybe a lot of entities, in my experience, don't move on is fear. Fear of the unknown. They don't know what's going to happen next.
I am still, what amazes me, and I kind of always circle back to this, is I envision this triangle where one of the legs of the triangle, one of the sides, is science. And one of the sides is what we now call the paranormal, which is, it's not science. It may be, it can be quasi-science. It can certainly use the scientific method, but it's not science. And then the third is religion. And what fascinates me is the intersection of all three of those, where those three all come together. It's a very gray area. Those are gray areas because you don't know exactly what's what, and it can be parts of all of them. And so, someday I'm convinced we'll get a fair amount of this sorted out, and I'm talking about here on Earth, not after we individually move on, but we here in our earthly strictures. I think we'll get a lot of this sorted out. I think eventually we'll get most of the scientific aspects sorted out. We'll figure out, hey, what is this energy? We may even figure out if we stick around long enough, if we last long enough as a race, we may even figure out some of this interdimensional aspects and how that works and why that exists and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it would be nice though if legitimate science would throw their hat in the ring of figuring this out.
Oh, sure it would. And there's lots of aspects. You mentioned Einstein earlier. There's lots of aspects of, especially all the cutting edge, the quantum physics and cosmology. Everything, all these various discoveries and neuroscience, my goodness, all these things going on right now that have a very strong, at least potential bearing on the paranormal. And I'm pretty sure that they will. But as you say, it's not as if the vast majority, there's a tiny, tiny percentage, but the vast majority of scientists aren't looking into these things because of their impact on the paranormal. They just happen to, cutting edge quantum physics and whatnot. Quantum entanglement I find fascinating because how can these two particles interact faster than the speed of sound? I mean, speed of light, from opposite ends of the universe. I mean, how can that be? Something is faster than light, and that defies physics as we now currently
Yeah,
understand it.
because Einstein always said if you go faster than the speed of light, you have a huge mass increase.
Exactly. That's right.
And you just get bigger and you get bigger and you get bigger. I mean, that's his theory. That's Einstein's theory. And he's been right about a lot of things.
He sure has.
I'm not going to question his theory. But this proof, like you said, is there of these things moving faster than light. It's there. All the data is there.
Exactly. How can that be?
Skirting this law of physics.
I agree. That is the absolute fundamental question. And I would think that honest scientists, or at least open-minded scientists, that would occur to them as well. Wow, if this can be, and it certainly appears to be, there's got to be a lot of stuff going on out there that we simply don't understand, and that it's arrogant and the height of hubris to think that we know everything that's going on, or even that we have the basic platform for knowing what's going on, because we don't.
And arrogance is right. I think you hit the nail on the head, because a lot of the problem with the paranormal as taken as a legitimate research is, well, there is no standards and practices. There's no one does it the same. I mean, there's no real uniform way of collecting data.
Exactly. And there needs to be for it to move forward. So I'm very much sympathetic with this whole movement, especially of the last 10, 15 years, and it seems to kind of coincide to a certain extent with the proliferation and success of the various ghost hunting TV shows. But I am sympathetic, very much so, with the desire, with the urge to come up with physical, objective evidence. But on the other hand, as Teresa says very often, that's kind of a shadow. That evidence is in and of itself kind of just a mere reflection of the reality of the actual paranormal experience, which is three-dimensional, which is so much fuller and more real and more immediate and more undeniable than any form of evidence. And you went through it with your two encounters with the menacing shadow figures. I am certain that in your six-year-old self and your young adult self, you never for one instant doubted the reality of that experience.
No, because once it's in your face and it's there, all questions are all there more than they ever were, but then you don't doubt either. I mean, it only takes one experience to turn a skeptic into a believer.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Hey, you know what we got to talk about? We barely mentioned. Let's talk about your show. Just fill everyone in when you're on, where they can find you, what the contact info is.
After Hours AM is it was a radio show that was never meant to really be. It's kind of funny. I started this show, it was oddly enough, with my wife Jennifer. We did it as just a hobby, because she'd always kind of wanted to get in the radio and just kind of took off. Began a life of its own. And now it's become what it has. And everyone that listens to the show knows that, how it became what it is. But it really meant to be fun, just like this show is. Just fun, man. Because if you're not having fun on radio, don't do it, you know. And so as through the fun and through the listeners, it's grown to be actually one of the bigger listened to radio shows out there, oddly enough. People actually enjoy listening to me for some strange reason. I still haven't figured that part out yet.
But, oh, heck.
We have some of the top paranormal researchers and just normal folk on the show. We've had you on the show. We had a great experience with you. Great interview. Everybody can catch that, of course, in the archives. But then you also co-hosted.
Oh, my. That a ball?
I'm glad you had a good time. It's really a laid-back show. It's just like this one. It's just free-form talk is really what it is. You can catch us really, where can't you catch us kind of thing. Best place to go to get us, though, to get all your information after Hours AM is www.afterhoursam.com. You can get everything there you ever want to know but are afraid to ask. You can even get, well, you can get past shows and you get to hear Eric right there on After Hours AM. We interviewed, well, the paranormal genealogist is who we had on the show, and we had a blast.
Oh, we sure did.
After Hours AM is just growing and growing and growing. I couldn't be happier. So I'm like a proud papa over here going, all right, way to go, kid. And we have no plans of stopping anytime soon. You can hear us pretty much if you go to afterhoursam.com. You can get us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as well as at tuneinradio.com. You can get us 24 hours, 7 days a week, and better radio stations everywhere pretty much. While we're kind of scaling back a bit because of time constraints right now, with a few things going on with some radio stations and moving a few things and growing, you can catch us live on the internet now. The internet feed is every Thursday at 8 p.m. Everywhere else is every night, of course, on the old terrestrial end. So, but if you want to know what terrestrial stations in your area, get a hold of me and I'd be happy to share that information with you. But everybody visit www.afterhoursam.com. And boy, did I ever sound like a radio host doing that, didn't I?
You did. And you are. Aren't you on about 200 stations, you said?
Yeah, we're cooking with gas. Yeah, we're up there. We're about two bills. And it's I want to get bigger. Well, not bigger, but it's really radio for the people, by the people kind of thing. And so as long as people want to listen, we'll keep building the thing. And we're going to have really quality people on the show. And that's what makes it go, is the quality of the people on the show, like the hosts. You know, like you coming on the show, being co-host, and my regular co-host, Bruce Bearclaw, and he is a Bigfoot researcher, which we lock horns once in a while because I'm not exactly sold on Bigfoot, but that's just me. And it kind of comes together with all these different views and mixes to be a really interesting show. And we're growing. And then, of course, look for Haunted America to be, part of this too. America's Most Haunted is going to be, you can read a lot of the articles that Eric is going to be putting out there right there, afterhoursam.com. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, so am I. Yeah, we're kind of, we're finding an intersection between our brands, and we definitely have some... We have some complementary strengths, so we're looking to help each other out in that regard. And I think that's what's most fun about it, is we really are in a position to sort of offer things to each other that that one is really good at and experienced at, and the other is not. And holy cow, that's the way it all goes. Plus, we get along and have a ball, like I said, boy, or like you said, we really had a lot of fun. That was last Thursday night.
It was, and I want to actually give a shout-out to Intrepid Paradigm Radio. We're joining their network over there at intrepidparadigmradio.com, and I'm hoping that you can hear this extremely fine program live with us over there sometime soon, huh, Eric?
Oh, yeah. We love live. You know, we always did the... America's Most Haunted Blog Talk Radio Show live until really just the last several months, and it just seemed the way the wind was blowing was everything seemed to be heading toward a podcast format, and we were told that that was how we should handle it. And it's fun. I like kind of the editing and putting it together and being able to create this new entity, the audio, long ago audio engineer in me, enjoys that part of it. But there's nothing like live, and I absolutely love the spontaneity. I feel very comfortable that way. It feels real. Somewhere, somehow, in the back of your mind, no matter how much you treat it like live and here and now, some portion of your brain knows it isn't. So it isn't quite the same. There's a little something different. So yeah, I mean, I like them both. I love them both. And of course, people should know, in case it wasn't clear to them, that your show, while you do it live, it's each evening, weeknights, it's every show is of course recorded and is
Yes, it
then
is.
is available in podcast form. So
Exactly.
yeah, we would love to switch into that, and we'd love to go to even, more than one day a week. I mean, interacting with you and since appearing on your show and then co-hosting and just chatting about how all this goes and where this may go and how it might go, it has absolutely revitalized my interest in radio. I feel like, starting all over again, yet with having I won't even tell you how many years on
Amen.
and off of experience. Suffice it to say, my first radio show was when I was 14. So it was a while ago.
So you got some, actually, you got some experience behind the microphone.
I do have some experience, but I really do feel completely revitalized and starting all over again. And I feel like a virgin, and it's super fun and very exciting. And I'm picture me dancing around like Madonna in that video.
Well, that's the thing too, and you touched on a little bit radio live and podcast. The radio industry has changed so much, even in the last 10 years. It's gone to a very closed off community of people. It's come from rather a closed off community where you really had to beg maybe a program director or know somebody at a station or somehow get yourself into studio to be able to talk. Or even spin records for that matter, you really had to have that inside track. Now anybody, quite honestly, with the drive and passion to have a radio show can. That's a beautiful thing and sometimes a terrifying thing all at one time.
Yes. Well, it's like all of the changes of the digital era. The barriers to entry are greatly reduced. I mean, essentially eliminated. A little bit of learning curve, how to use the equipment, how do you do this, how do you do that. Once you get that sorted out, there's essentially no barrier to entry. It's relative, it's inexpensive. In fact, it can be essentially free, almost free anyway. So that's a wonderful thing. There's been an explosion of content. Think of it in every area, not just radio, but in book writing, in blogging. So that would be the equivalent of some form of periodical writing or journaling, perhaps, I guess. And just across the board in video, look at YouTube. My goodness, the barriers to entry in all these different media are now either utterly gone or at least greatly reduced. But what that means is you have an enormous glut of content, and no one is really sorting it out. What is good? What is bad? What is mediocre? And that's what we've lost. And so look at all the tools that have grown up just in the last, say, even 5 years, where you're curating and you're performing that editorial function by recommending to others, this is good, this sucks. So it's become a community, it's a citizen project in terms of curating all these different mediums. So, circling back to what you said, it's fantastic that those barriers of entry are down, that essentially anyone can now do a radio show. The downside of it is those barriers of entry are down, and virtually anyone can now do a radio show.
Exactly. And I get asked a lot of times, how do I get into radio? How do I kind of bust into the higher echelons of it? Because there is definitely a division in radio.
Oh, sure.
You
In
know, you
everything.
have your small, just as important shows out there that maybe don't get the airplay an After Hours AM does or America's Most Haunted does. But the thing of it is you have to pay your dues, number one. You just can't show up and say, "Hey, I got a microphone and I got something to say." It doesn't work that way. You got to pay those dues. You got to kind of do all those things, approve yourself, prove number one that you have talent. That's the number one hurdle. Everybody thinks that they have talent to do radio. Everyone's grandma tells them that they're great. You know what I mean? Eric,
Oh, of course.
everyone's family is going to say, "Hey, that was a great radio show." But when you start putting it out there for the masses and trying to move it forward, then you run into guys like Eric. You run into guys like me. You run into guys that know what they're doing in radio. And you ask for our critique, I guess, would be the best word. Because I hear a lot of radio shows. A lot of radio shows get links get emailed to me.
Sure.
Hey, listen to the show. It's a wonderful show.
Absolutely.
I click on it. I listen. I give it a good 15 minutes. If it's really good, I'll listen to the whole thing. Rarely do I listen to a whole radio show anymore. Normally, I can have the host pegged down to strengths and weaknesses within 15 minutes of the show.
Sure. So, 15 minutes is a lot. I mean, that's a long time.
It's a long time. But I guess what I'm saying, long story short, is anyone can have a radio show, but not anyone can have a good radio show.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables, and you can speed it up. You can speed up the experience. And obviously, there's a whole very, very wide range of innate talent. So, of course, that is a factor. But just assuming, you know, a modicum of talent, something to say, reasonable voice, reasonable diction, and ability to string sentences together. So assuming all that, there's still a kind of a whole range of things that people don't necessarily think a lot about. You got to make it sound good. Mm-hmm. There's that whole side of it, the kind of the engineering side of it. You need to make sure that you are doing the best you can anyway to make it sound the best that it can. That does count. That's important. There's sustainability. I think most people really could do a really good show or two or maybe 10. I think most people really could. But can you sustain it show after show after show after show and keep it interesting? And can you keep up your own personal interest in it? Because that's what you find on some of these mass outlets like Blog Talk Radio, which you know is a fantastic outlet for tens of thousands of people. But what you find is that it's very difficult and not a whole lot of those people stick with their shows for a variety of reasons. You just lose interest. You just don't think you're getting anywhere. You get bored. Just whatever. You know, there's any number of factors. So that's kind of the next level. It has to be sustainable. You have to be able to do something that people want to come back to, not just here once or twice, but to come back to. And you have to know how to interact if you're going to have guests. You have to know how to interact with them. And you have to know how to function as a host, not just someone who blabs all the time. And hey, I'll tell you what, that is something I've really had to relearn. I did a lot of interviews real early in my career, and I mean very early. I mean like 20, 30 years ago.
Sure.
I did a lot of interviews. And then there was a long gap where I was basically, when I was on the radio, I was basically a DJ. I was solo. I was playing music. It was fun because I was mostly picking out the music. And that was my key interest during that time, was to pick out music, put it together, introduce new music to people, all that kind of stuff. But I was on my own and working with music. So coming back into it through the Blog Talk Radio door, you know, I've had to relearn how to shut up a fair amount of time and to function as a facilitator and not to just be someone who's blabbing and blab, blab, blabbing away. You know, to hear myself talk. So that has been something I've had to relearn, and it takes time and it takes effort and it takes some humility. You know, I have to say, hey, I am not perfect. I'm going to cough right now. All righty.
Hit the cough button. No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, you have to be comfortable in your own skin, number one, and be confident in your own abilities to do an interview. How many times do you hear a show where the guest actually becomes the interviewer in a lot of ways? They just take it over and they just kind of go and talk for hours and you don't even know that there's a host.
Right. Yeah, especially some of these very often interviewed guests, you know, they just launch into their routine. Well, I'll tell you what, we have once again just chatted up a storm for an hour. An hour has come and gone. As mentioned previously, I must dash off into the night. But wow, another great time, fantastic experience. Actually learned quite a bit myself about, got some new perspective on EVPs in particular, but just the whole paranormal experience, as well as the whole radio experience. Kind of a horizontal and vertical approach tonight. So once again, I want to thank the great Joel Sturgis. Be sure to catch him every weeknight, After Hours AM. Go to his site to find out, to either listen to recorded shows or live shows, or find out where you can hear the terrestrial broadcasts of his show. And that is afterhoursam.com. All info is there. And as Joel mentioned, we're going to start filling up that site with some print content as well. We'll start kind of covering the paranormal news and reviews and all that. And that is going to be lots of fun. So once again, thank you so much, Joel. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Not a problem. I really enjoyed it. I always have a good time here, Eric. It's always a good conversation. I don't think we've ever talked any less than an hour.
Man, we have a hard time shutting up because we are so cool and simpatico.
That's right. We are the cat's meow.
Exactly. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a great evening and or day or afternoon.
That's right. Have a good one.
Or brunch. All right. Well, I got to haul Lily off to her bus, and
that'll be a good experience for her.
Bid her a tearful farewell. She's gone to camp every year. She's been away a fair amount, but not for a while. It's been a while since she's been gone.
Think of the experience that she's going to have up there in Canada.
It will be exciting, I'm sure, and do lots of francophoning. She'll be
You know, I live an hour away from Canada.
I know, you're way up there.
I do deal with the Canadians all the time. What a bunch of assholes, to be honest with you.
Canadians.
I hate the Canadian people.
Oh, Canadians.